All right, be seated, please. You took me at my word, I see. All right, good. All right, we call number 24-60208, the estate of LaMelo Parker versus Mississippi Department of Public Safety. Mr. Eichelberger?
That's correct, Your Honor.
All right. You're up, sir.
May it please the court. Issue one in our brief and exhibit one to the amended complaint is concerned with the idea that the current text of 42 U.S.C. section 1983 is not what Congress intended when it passed the Civil Rights Act of 1871. Nevertheless, this court is powerless to scrap years of qualified immunity jurisprudence, and we recognize that. However, we do wish to preserve that issue and wanted to ensure that on these particular facts, if this court does find qualified immunity, that it is time for the Supreme Court to revisit that issue, or to visit that issue in the first place. Moving on from that and moving instead to the Fourth Amendment claims against Trooper Doe 1. I will be covering those. Ms. Isles will be covering the claims against the other officers. The lower court found a seizure took place, rightly so, just that it was objectively reasonable and that no jury could find for Baby LaMelo's estate. The lower court then went on to find that even if the seizure was unreasonable, that qualified immunity would protect all of the officers, as the law did not clearly establish that LaMelo was not to be shot. As the Supreme Court has repeatedly instructed, excessive force cases require a careful analysis of the facts. And given that we are at the pleading stage, and this court is reviewing the grant of 12B6 and 12C motions, the facts pled are to be treated in the light most favorable to the plaintiff. The district court failed to conduct that careful analysis and instead created a bright line rule that anytime anyone shoots at an officer, it is per se objectively reasonable back. That is not the law. Instead, the court must do, as stated, a careful analysis of the facts alleged in the light most favorable to the plaintiff, and the lower court here did not do that. The district court wholly failed to consider the pled facts that LaMelo was knowingly, directly in the line of fire of each of these officers, that each officer fired their weapons at LaMelo, and that the officers fired their weapons not only in the direction of an innocent baby, but also in the direction of the stranded motorists who were behind the car LaMelo was in. Yes,
ma'am. So would it have been more reasonable to allow Smith to shoot at them without returning fire?
I think there is already instruction as to that situation in Scott v. Harris. In Scott v. Harris, the court talks about the paramount governmental interest of public safety. Certainly, officer safety is a governmental interest, but is not the paramount government interest. And here, those officers, to a person, had all been trained that they were not to fire if they were going to shoot an innocent person. That's why it took hours.
Can you point to any case from any jurisdiction where a court has held that returning fire at an active shooter is unreasonable?
There is not a case where we have facts like this. There are cases that clearly establish that what they did was improper. Primarily that's Kuhn in the line of cases from Kuhn v. Ledbetter over the last four decades. But here specifically, these facts are so shocking and egregious, again, because law enforcement officers are trained not to shoot an innocent baby or through one in order to acquire their target. This is such a rare set of facts that, again, rare but already beyond debate as to the constitutionality and the appropriateness of it. We don't have that situation. Typically what we see and what the lower court relied upon are cases in which the plaintiff was the shooter. And here the district court in many ways analyzed this as if LaMelo was the shooter, and that's improper. Instead, again, Scott v. Harris, I mentioned that, and the paramount governmental interest. Scott v. Harris in a way is, or can be twisted. The facts can be changed just a hair to answer this directly on point. In Scott v. Harris, you had Harris driving at 85 miles an hour down two-lane roads in Cowena County, Georgia, recklessly endangering the public. He was a clear threat to the public at large. In that case, Officer Scott decided it was a better decision to ram the back of Harris's vehicle, knowing that he might cause serious injury or death to Harris. And he did so, and that was found to be reasonable. If there was a pedestrian between Harris's car and Scott, and Scott made the decision, I am going to drive directly over that pedestrian, knowing that I will kill this pedestrian, to stop this flight of Harris, those would be these facts. And I would posit that no court would find that to be reasonable. Here, I'm sorry.
Before you run out of time, if only one officer was identified as shooting the baby, killing the baby, did all those other officers shoot and just miss?
They did. There were a lot of officers that missed. We don't know.
One of those officers that were shooting at the same time they missed the baby?
It may have been that Doe 1 killed both. Yeah. We're still just at the pleading stage and don't know at this point. The facts is we've been able to gather them. They're not even pled at this point yet, but the facts that we've been able to gather them is there were at least 17 projectiles recovered from the car. One bullet hit baby LaMelo, two bullets hit Eric Smith. There is possibly a graze wound to Eric Smith's head, but at this point it's just too early to tell.
Did ballistics know that all those other officers fired?
Yes, Your Honor, and not only did they fire, there is some question as to how many rounds in total were fired. Assuming that all law enforcement officer weapons were loaded at the start of their shifts, it would have been 57 rounds. So, Your Honor, in kind of conclusion of my part, we believe that this is clearly established. In Coon, I believe the district court may have misread the facts there. The district court held there was a standoff inside the trailer. A closer reading of those facts would show that the standoff and the negotiations happened prior to Coon entering the trailer. He was talking to his wife before that happened. We believe Coon's good law.
You're obviously very familiar with qualified immunity law, and I was saying your argument. So I know you say the facts are different, but as you heard me say, every one of these cases, particularly in 1983, the facts are always different. Officer shootings, et cetera. They are quintessentially different, but Judge Willard asked you to point a question. So, assuming arguendo, and this is a 12B6, articulate for me what this panel would say or how the panel would say. Tell me what the panel would say.
Your Honor, I think we would say, or you would say, that with respect clearly to Doe 1, and that's the part that I'm handling now, that there was indeed the possibility that a reasonable trier of fact could find that Doe 1's act of shooting was unreasonable. These facts also are clear, it's clearly established that these facts violate LaMelo Parker's rights against unreasonable seizure because Coon in that line of cases tell us that firing at an enclosure where an innocent might be located inside is already establishes bad law in this, establishes a bad act in this circuit. And here, these officers to a person knowingly shot at the innocent baby. He was in each of their sights.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you, sir. All right. Ms. Isles.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court. Your Honors, we're here today not only because one officer fired directly at an innocent baby, but because 11 of them did, as Judge Clement touched on. This was a joint operation, and every officer who fired their weapons exhibited the same unreasonable conduct, the same complete and total disregard, conscious disregard, in fact, for LaMelo Parker's life. And under this court's reasoning in Grandstaff, are liable for the foreseeable consequences of their actions, which was the death of LaMelo Parker.
Smith, the father was actively firing at the officers. So why was it unreasonable for them to try to protect themselves? Shoot back.
Your Honor, Eric Smith was, as we have pled, Eric Smith fired one shot in the direction of Deputy Allen, who had recklessly placed himself in the line of fire to chase his police dog. And that is certainly relevant to the reasonableness analysis under the Fourth Amendment seizure. But the trial court...
Was it reasonable for him to try to shoot him because he was in the line of fire? I don't
know. No, Your Honor. That, to be more clear, the fact that Eric Smith shot at Deputy Allen should be considered in the trial court's analysis of whether the officers who fired at LaMelo Parker was reasonable. It's a totality of the circumstances analysis, and the U.S. Supreme Court has emphasized that for the last at least 40 years, beginning with Tennessee v. Garner and Graham versus Connor. And the lower court in this case did not properly conduct that analysis. The lower court overlooked two key facts pled in our amended complaint. First, LaMelo Parker was directly in the line of fire. These officers, all of them who shot their weapons, fired directly at LaMelo Parker. He was one with the target. The trial court does not appear in the trial court's analysis. Second, the trial court does not acknowledge our pled fact that there were dozens of innocent bystanders on sitting stationary on I-10 West on the other side of the median behind Eric Smith's vehicle. So when these 11 officers fired at Eric Smith's vehicle and necessarily at LaMelo Parker directly, they were also firing at dozens of innocent bystanders and members of the public. And as Mr. Eichelberger touched on a moment ago, the paramount interest is the safety of the public.
By bystanders, do you mean people driving by?
Traffic was stationary. I'm sorry.
There were people standing around watching this.
They were in their vehicles, stationary on I-10 West. They could not move. The law enforcement had stopped traffic. However, there were no innocent bystanders, as far as we know, on the other side of the officers in the line of Eric Smith's fire. So the only danger Eric Smith posed at that moment was to Deputy Allen, who had recklessly placed himself in the line of fire. Every other officer who fired, as we pled, was safely behind cover. And so in that moment, the law enforcement officers who shot made a value judgment to protect the life of their officer, even though it meant gunning down an innocent civilian, LaMelo Parker, and recklessly endangering the lives of dozens of citizens behind Eric Smith's vehicle. And for that reason, Your Honor, the trial court's decision that there was no constitutional violation must be reversed. That is that bright line rule that Mr. Eichelberger referred to.
What case law requires the trial court to take into account these bystanders that you mean? I thought the argument was centrally focused on the baby, but I mean, I see you're at it, but I mean, what cases are out there that put the bystanders, which were not shot, into the calculus that the district court has to consider on the 12B6?
Your Honor, it goes to the Fourth Amendment reasonableness analysis set forth first by the U.S. Supreme Court in Graham versus Connor, and then again in Kingsley versus Hendrickson. In Kingsley, the court set out a number of factors, and to save time, I won't read all of them unless the court would like me to, but to your point, one of those factors is whether the plaintiff was actively resisting. Another is the severity of the security of the problem at issue. And in terms of the question of the bystanders fitting into the totality of the circumstances analysis, you can look to Scott versus Harris. There, the Supreme Court stated that the reasonableness analysis should account for, quote, not only the number of lives at risk, but also their relative culpability, and also the likelihood of serious injury or death. Here, these officers who fired, when they shot, as we pled, they aimed their weapons directly at LaMelo Parker and fired. He was that baby was virtually guaranteed to be hit, if not killed. And that weighs strongly in favor of unreasonableness. With regard to our claims against the officers who fired, but whose bullets, by the grace of God, did not strike LaMelo, the lower court found we did not have standing to sue those officers. However, what the trial court did not account for is that at this pleading stage, we do not know which officer fired his or her weapon first. It is entirely possible that Trooper Doe 1 was not the first person to shoot, and that other officers fired first and encouraged Trooper Doe 1 to shoot his weapon as well. And for that point, Your Honor, this court should look no further than Grand Staff. In Grand Staff, this court found that, just as in Grand Staff, the firestorm that killed the plaintiff in that case was in all respects a joint operation. The Fifth Circuit found that the same recklessness and the same conscious disregard for the life of an innocent person found that there was a claim against those officers. Now, the trial court distinguished Grand Staff because in that case, they did not know whose bullet killed the plaintiff. However, what the trial court overlooks is the focus of the Grand Staff analysis was that each officer who fired his gun encouraged others to do the same. Your Honors, we contend that this is sufficient to establish a causal connection between the conduct of the 10 officers who fired and the death of Lamello Parker. I see that my time is expiring.
Is this the original complaint? I mean, what we're dealing with, the live complaint, or is this one that has been amended? I just can't remember.
We filed an amended complaint, Your Honor, when this matter was still in state court in Hinds County, Mississippi. Your Honor, with regard to our claims against the other officers who shot but missed Lamello, we contend that their actions amounted to a Fourth Amendment violation. However, if this court were to find that because their bullets did not strike Lamello, that it is not a Fourth Amendment seizure, these claims could properly be analyzed under the 14th Amendment under Grand Staff.
All right, counsel, you've exhausted your time. Mr. Eichelberger has rebuttal time for when he comes back up. We'll hear from the other side.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Right, Mr. Whitfield.
Good morning, Your Honors.
Good morning.
Just so I can get maybe a little housekeeping matter out of the way, I'm here on behalf of Michael Moran, who was one of the officers with the City of Gulfport. Mr. Moran is pretty much situated like the rest of the officers, but for the Mississippi Highway Patrol officer. And at the hearing before the trial court, the plaintiff's attorney indicated that he was not contesting or not contending anything related to the, quote, ramming or the pit maneuver. And the trial court held that there was at least some contact there in the possibility of force. It didn't come up then. It hadn't come up now. Therefore, I have asked the sheriff's lawyer to kind of give me his time, which is what I'm going to do, okay? There basically is three different issues that I want to deal with Your Honors today. One issue that did not come up at all in terms of the argument before Your Honors this morning is the issue of standing. That was the singular most reason why the trial court said, in addition to others, why the trial court said that there is no claim against my client Moran and the deputies. Now, we don't know who the names of the highway patrolmen are, and in the complaint clearly identifies patrolman number one as the shooter. That patrolman number one apparently, according to the complaint, indicated that was the bullet, or from his gun, that was the bullet that struck Lamello Parker. That's in the complaint. It was alleged, it was amended and alleged again, it was argued at the trial court. We all are standing here before Your Honors today. Everybody acknowledges that it was the highway patrol that made contact with the baby. Not my client, not the sheriff's deputies. So the people that are here before you today did not have any ammunition or bullet that made contact either with Mr. Smith or with Mr. Parker.
All right, who is the highway patrol officer by name that is discerned to have been, quote, the shooter of LaMelo? Is that known?
I don't even know that.
Does anybody know who it is?
Well, I'm sure the highway patrol knows that. We do not know that. They do not know that. The county does not know that. The sheriff's department does not know that. The city of Gulfport does not know that. Nobody knows who the name. Now, we can take a guess at it.
I'll just say, speaking for myself, it worries me on a 12B6 to wash a case out when there still seems to, I mean, there's no getting past the tragedy of this. The end result might be what it is, but it worries me to pour a case out on a 12B6 when in this kind of fast-moving circumstance, the best we can do is read stuff about John Doe and Officer 1. We're looking behind a box to figure out who's who. You've got highway patrol, you've got sheriff's deputies. I mean, you have a large manner, and that's not a position against whether they should have been there. But in terms of figuring out who is or are the shooters, it just seems pretty early to be pouring the case out on that alone. I'm not saying there are other arguments, but I had trouble just trying to read and understand who's on first, who's on second, you know, who's on third, who really was the shooter. Notwithstanding whether they have culpability, but I mean, where did the bullets come from that actually killed Eric Smith and the baby? If these other people didn't shoot or never pull their weapon, that's one thing.
Well, Judge, I'll say this. When you say who's on first, who's on second, who's on third, I know this. My client, in terms of this analysis, is not even on the field.
Okay.
Because the highway patrolman is indicated actually in the complaint as the shooter. That was admitted to at the trial hearing. Nobody has denied it to this second that it was the Mississippi Highway Patrolman that was the shooter. As far as contact is concerned, there is no other ballistic that confirms that the shooter was anything other than a highway patrolman. So it's not really one of those things, Judge, that is murky. We know who the shooter was. It was highway patrolman number one. They pled it. We agree with that. And furthermore, we agree that it wasn't Moran, it wasn't Moskowitz, and it wasn't Allen. And those are the other three actors that are part of this equation. Now, why is that important, Judge?
I just missed.
I know my client did. At Mr. Smith, yes.
All three of these people.
Well, I'm sure the other ones did as well. I know mine did.
They missed.
He missed. All missed. Now, I got my theory as to how they all missed, Your Honor, and I'm certainly willing to share that with you. But I don't know that I want to take up that much time in dealing with it unless Your Honor thinks it's important. Well, here's my theory. My theory is that the last thing that any of the people out there that had a gun wanted to do was to impact that baby. And my belief is that my client erred on the side of caution to avoid coming into contact with the child. And while we're talking about the child, Your Honor, there really isn't any proof in this record to this second that Eric Smith, who was the shooter, the guy that was in the car, was holding LaMelo Parker as a human shield, if you were, just to use that word. There's really no proof in this record that that took place. I think that the plaintiff's lawyers have surmised that, but I think it's in their brief that they acknowledge that they really don't know.
We're only complaining it's a three-month-old baby. It just sort of gets past me that the three-month-old is laying in the back seat somewhere.
Well, I didn't say that, Your Honor.
No, you didn't. I was being facetious only slightly.
Right.
Because it's a three-month-old, and, you know, is in the car. The guy sped away. This arises from a domestic complaint where he takes the baby, et cetera, et cetera. You know, I'm watching enough TV to figure probably, you know, he does have the baby somewhere in his arm or whatever, albeit he's got to drive and all that sort of stuff. But it's just not a stretch for me that the baby didn't land in the back seat somewhere.
Judge.
But my main point is that we're on the complaint. Right. As you said, there's nothing in the record.
There's nothing.
Right, and we're at the 12B6 stage.
I understand. There's nothing in the record as to the position of LaMelo Parker in front of Mr. Smith. There's nothing in the record about it. Now, they have pled that he was there, but then they acknowledge in their brief before the court that they really don't know. And I don't know that either. I don't know that really anybody does, at least in this record. Now, I'll say this, though. The very first thing that, Your Honor, that Judge McNeil dealt with was standing. Now, the elements of standing, and we cited all of those things in our brief, essentially was an injury that was traceable to the defendant, that was capable of redress, and was more than just theoretical. Now, the two first elements I want to deal with just very quickly. An injury traceable to the defendant. There is no injury in this record that's traceable to my defendant or any of the deputies that are here before the court today. Now, the Highway Patrol's not here, and I'm not here to talk good or bad about them. I'm just suggesting to Your Honors that in the record today, complaint, the Highway Patrolman, number one, is alleged to have been the shooter, nobody else. The plaintiffs, by doing that, have admitted that there is no injury that's traceable to my client or the deputies. Now, the citation of the Grand Staff case is a little weird, because Judge McNeil also commented on that by his opinion. He indicated very specifically that Grand Staff did not have any application, and the reason it didn't have any application is because in that particular case, the shooting that went on that ultimately resulted in the death of the plaintiff in that case was from several different sources, all of whom apparently, and this is Judge McNeil's words, apparently made contact with the plaintiff. And he indicated in his opinion, and I don't have any reason to disagree, I think he's correct about it, that at the time that particular shooting happened, the ballistics wasn't that big of a thing. Since ballistics wasn't that big of a thing, I'm not real sure that there was any ability to even know that. But here we are in 2025. This incident happened in 2021. Ballistics is a thing. We are able to identify the shooter today. And that's what Judge McNeil found. And I have no reason, I think, under the law to disagree with that. And Grand Staff does not help the plaintiffs get around that fact that there is no injury that is traceable to Officer Moran or to Deputy Moskowitz or to Deputy Allen. None.
Did the father file a lawsuit? I know he's dead, but was a lawsuit filed on behalf of the father?
Was the lawsuit filed on behalf of the father, Eric Smith? No. No. No, ma'am. No. So I know that you all are pretty specifically aware of the facts, but let me see if I can't move into the actual, like the qualified immunity and those issues. It kind of goes without saying that under Graham versus O'Connor, that the excessive force is kind of measured against the severity of the crime. The other thing that is in consideration is going to be the amount of threat that it's made to the officers or third parties. And I'll deal with the third party issue in just a minute. I heard some things on argument that I had not heard before. And also the degree of the resistance that the perpetrator, or in this particular case, Mr. Smith, was putting up against the officers. Mr. Smith had killed two people in Louisiana earlier in that day. He led officers of three or four different departments on a multi-state chase across the border into Mississippi. He was spike stripped twice. He got out of his vehicle at least one time and took shots at officers just across the state line. He made it into Harrison County, which is where Gulfport and Biloxi are. Ultimately, he was...
sort of like Judge Clement said, you know, we're reading this, you know, watching enough TV, it just was slightly curious, quote unquote, visualizing this long chase with a jillion police officers, with spikes, in the daytime, on an interstate highway, not a backcountry road that's weaving in all of this stuff, and yet no interdiction was able to be discerned? That's not a question. That's just my cloud of thought reading through all of this stuff, but I'm not asking for an answer. I'm just trying to say, with all that's admitted in the points, you know, before getting to that, I'm just trying to figure out how you avoided the spikes, et cetera, et cetera. It must be something missing here.
Judge, I'm not trying to be flippant about it, you know, but TV is TV, and TV is entertainment. And I don't know that TV necessarily is reality.
Oh, I shouldn't put it that way, but you got my point.
I understand what you're saying. We do know. We do know that ultimately when the defendant, the criminal defendant, Eric Smith, was ultimately brought to a standstill, it was because of interdiction on the part of law enforcement. And they had a right to protect themselves and to protect third parties. I mean, that's the bottom line analysis that you get into when you talk about O'Connor and excessive force, okay? Now, when you use those three elements that I quoted to the court a minute ago, the Graham factors, the severity of the crime that had been, that had occurred before all of this happened, I don't know that you can get any more severe. The threat to the officers and to the third and to the public, I don't know that you could get any more severe. He had already shot at some officers earlier in the day in the chase. He had shot at some officers out on the highway, or at least in the median, just before the shooting. Shot at some officers. What I heard the court hear a minute ago was that apparently this officer was shot at. I don't know what that specifically means, but
well, let me ask you a version of what I asked your friend on the other side. Can you point to any case in any jurisdiction that it is reasonable to shoot directly at a suspect when there is a substantial risk that an innocent person will be hit?
Can I point to any case? I can, but I got a red light. So
don't.
Yeah, we got you here. You sat here through that other case. You know that red light's not going to save you from Judge Willis.
Is this like the life ring on the TV show? Can I answer the question or no?
We got you until we turn you loose. That's all you need to know. So go for it.
Okay. Can I quote you a case? I cannot quote you a case, and I think that's a good thing, because then it's not clearly established. Now, I don't know that I'm willing to agree that the officer that ultimately ended up did shooting Mr. Smith aimed directly, like it's been said by the plaintiff, aimed directly at LaMelo Parker. Well, I don't know
aimed,
that that's true.
Aimed at, but there's a substantial risk that the baby's going to get hit if you're trying to shoot the guy who's holding the baby.
Judge, that is completely 100% true, but you know what? Those officers have got a responsibility out on that street to understand that not only under Graham, they have an obligation to protect themselves, but they've got an obligation to protect the very people that Your Honor just heard today were apparently in their cars along the roadway. They have an obligation to protect the people that ultimately, if this particular defendant were allowed to proceed down the highway, they owe an obligation to protect those people too. So this is a classic Graham versus O'Connor equation where this is really not excessive force. It is not unreasonable force. And to be honest with you, under the Fourth Amendment analysis, it's objectively reasonable that these officers were able to stop this individual, even though it's unfortunate that LaMelo Parker got hurt.
But you would rewind and have us remember that the threshold is the standing argument that you're making, that your clients, you're saying there's no traceable injury to the one's name, right?
100%, Judge. My client ultimately fired in the direction of LaMelo Parker and Eric Smith, but his intended target was not LaMelo Parker. His intended target was Eric Smith, and he didn't hit anybody. Now, you know, standing here today, I'm thankful that he didn't, because I think I can meet a more particularized, specific burden for him. There was no injury that's traceable to Mr. Moran or Allen or Moskowitz.
The person who shot the baby, did he also shoot the daddy?
We understand, Judge, that the ballistics indicated that the same bullet went through Baby and Smith. We understand that. I know that no bullet from Moran's gun, Allen's gun, Moskowitz's gun did any damage to either one of these people.
Everybody on the table there either represents Moran, Moskowitz, or Allen. Is that right?
Correct.
All right. In Harrison County. All right.
And the city of Gulfport is also here.
All right. Got you covered. Any other questions?
Can I take another 20 minutes?
You want a long answer?
Does the short answer begin with an N and end an O? Okay.
Exactly.
Thank you. Thank you. Appreciate it, Judge.
Thank you, sir. But we do appreciate not making light at all of the circumstance. But, you know, we've read the briefs, and nothing we didn't ask you does not minimize anything that's in the briefing. But as you know, oral argument is for us to get a clearer understanding of what. So whatever wasn't argued, it's in the briefs, and we'll get it. All right. Back to you, Mr. Eichelberger. You've got rebuttal.
Before you get started, can I ask you a question about the bystanders that you're focused on?
Certainly, Your Honor.
Is that in the brief?
I'm blanking on the brief at the moment. It certainly was in the amended complaint. And to paint this picture, and it's something I wanted to address, counsel opposite talked about the duty to these other people on I-10. In the complaint, we plead the following facts. Eric Smith's car was immobilized, not capable of movement, stuck in the mud, in the median between the eastbound and westbound lanes of I-10. The officers were on the eastbound lanes of I-10. They had drawn their weapons and pointed at a car in the median. In the amended complaint, we recount portions of a cell phone video that was taken by what appears to be a father and daughter couple. It's a father and a daughter stranded in the line of parked cars on I-10 westbound. They are behind Eric Smith's car. And in there, the father tells his daughter, "We don't want to be right here. A lot of bullets could come flying this way." And she pleads with him, "Roll up the window, Dad." And he says, "It ain't going to matter, baby." Those were the people that these officers put in harm's way with their gunfire. And for them to argue now that they were trying to protect them doesn't really match up with the pled facts.
All right, let's stay within the lane. This is clearly, and you know, not a negligence case. Recklessness doesn't apply. Gross negligence. This is not a tort. It's 1983. The case is a legion. It's qualified immunity. You know what the standards are. We know what they are. We got your first argument. It's a bad thing, but that's not in our job description. So we're there. So within the confines of where we are, counsel opposite argues vigorously and passionately that everybody over there on that table that you're knowing didn't strike either Eric Smith or the baby, so they're not the shooters. So we've got the phantom defendants, the highway patrol people, and so their first argument out the door is the standing issue. So I want you to address the standing issue that's prominent here.
Yes, Your Honor. Counsel opposite said essentially that Moran and these other officers didn't kill LaMelo, and that is, from what we understand, true, and we pled that is true. But that doesn't mean that they didn't try to, and that's what we pled.
Yeah, but they're saying you got to find a traceable injury. You know, it's not torts. You know, it's not, you know, it's not torts. That's the only way I know how to put it. And so, you know, he's arguing in the brief, et cetera, that you've got to show a traceable injury, which means they say not only didn't shoot, there was no impact of their bullets. So I don't know how you can get there just by saying they fired. If this was negligence, that'd be different. So,
to begin with, each of them fired and we believe struck the car. So that also could be the seizure part of the Fourth Amendment. But that said, with respect specifically to standing, I would point the court to Bennett versus Speer. With respect to the traceable injury, and that's Bennett versus Speer, 520 U.S. 154, specifically at 169, that does not exclude injury produced by determinative or coercive effect upon the action of someone else. We don't know who fired first in this case. With respect to the ballistics, we don't know. We don't know which bullet was fired first. It is our contention that each of them, and this is the proposition for which we have cited Grandstaff, they had the coercive effect upon the other. Each firing, each shot encouraged the other to shoot.
All the ones at that table, they're lumped in with the highway patrol. Is that the kind of coercive piece you're talking about?
The moment that first officer fired at LaMelo Parker, the others joined in.
Yeah, but that sounds like torts to me. I'm not, you know, arguing the case, but it sounds like torts to me. You know, you're saying because they were all in there in this mass, whatever these others did, they should be lumped in. I hear the argument, but you're going to have to show me the Supreme Court case that says you can get there that way. I understand the argument you'd want to make to a jury. I get that clearly. But, you know, we're right here at this threshold, and the pushback is about standing. His argument, if I understood him, is saying highway patrol shooters. Highway patrol hit Eric Smith, kills baby, etc. They're not at the table. You've sued the others who were there, but I don't know the case that you can get them just because, quote, they're there. And I'm just trying to give you an opportunity, you know, to go for the jugular, if you can explain to us how the panel gets there, if we were, you know, so inclined. I mean, qualified immunity is stronger than Ajax, is the way I put it, you know?
Yes, sir. So with respect to that, Your Honor, and bearing in mind we are at the pleading stage, any or all of the other 10 officers may have fired before Trooper Doe 1 did. It is entirely possible that their shots spurred Doe 1 to pull the trigger on his assault rifle. This assertion must be taken as true at this stage and is sufficient to establish the causal connection that is required between the conduct of these 10 officers and the death of LaMelo Parker.
So are you saying they should have intervened with the highway patrolman?
Well, certainly there should have been. Certainly there should have been command and control over this situation. There was not. That was lacking. The grand jury found that to be the case. But there certainly should have been greater communication. I don't know that failing to communicate is grounds for an excessive force or, you know, for Fourth or 14th Amendment claim. But certainly there should have been much greater effort of coordination.
Yeah, but you know, that's not, I mean, I've been on this court 30 years and I've seen a whole bunch of these. And I'm telling you, when I read these pleadings, they're just gripping to me. I'm gonna just be honest. They are just gripping. But that has nothing to do with, you know, what the law is. And most all these 1983s, the facts are egregious, but it's not torts. And so, you know, we've read the cases. We're going to read all the other cases. We'll go through it. I'm sympathetic personally. It's a 12B6. You know, they might surely win at summary judgment or something like that, but 12B6 gives me some pause. But it's in the books for a reason. You know, Iqbal and all those cases were 12B6s. So, you know, that's why I asked, was this the live complaint? So it's the amended complaint. You're not arguing that, well, the judge didn't give you a shot at amending some other facts, so we have, you know, what we have here. So do you have remaining, assuming whatever happens here, does there remain a complaint in state court as to the highway patrol or some other actors?
Yes, Your Honor. The amended complaint, which we filed the complaint in the Circuit Court of Hinds County, filed the amended complaint there prior to service in accordance with Mississippi Rules of Civil Procedure. It was then removed to federal court, and that's how we found ourselves in the Southern District. It has been remanded, of course, pending this ruling here, to Hinds County Circuit Court for further proceedings on the state tort claims grounds. And Your Honor,
there a Mississippi analog to qualified immunity?
It's a reckless disregard standard that we would have to.
Okay, I was just curious. So, but there is pending in state court other things. Are those against the Highway Patrol?
The Highway Patrol and the individual officers.
I took your time. Give him a minute, counsel. I'm feeling charitable on Monday.
I appreciate you. Thank you. I had a great.
Not that charitable.
So, Your Honor, we are, as you said, at the pleading stage. And I would say that this case is different than all of those cases that have come before. When you look at the district court's order, there's not a case that comes close to these facts as we have pled them, which are these officers, each one of the people they represent, as well as the ones who are not here today, pointed their weapons directly at LaMelo and fired. Counsel opposite has a theory as to why they missed. That tells you they knew they shouldn't have been doing it in the first place. Your Honor.
The officer very pointedly says there's no case, but he says that's good because that means it's not clearly established. I mean, that was a strong point he made. You know, this law's got to be clearly established. I mean, you're still going. But
thank you, Your Honor. If I can address that. Just because the facts are more egregious than situations where this court has found qualified immunity does not apply does not mean that qualified immunity does not apply. I mean, that it applies. And I think that would be my response there. This is far more egregious than any shooting case into a car where qualified immunity has been held not to cover the officers.
All right, I think we got your argument. All right, thank you for both sides, and please don't take my liberty as anything undermining the severity of the case. But it's a tough case, and we are seriously have looked at it, and we'll decide the case as best we can. Thank you, counsel, for both sides.
Thank you, Your Honor.
All right, we will.